Hilliard Lyons is proud to become a part of Baird, a trusted financial services firm that shares our commitment to the community. I'm Jeff Main, branch manager with Hilliard Lyons. You can learn more about Baird and our new partnership at HilliardToBaird.com.
Our busy hour number two will start with the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. It's our great friend, Mick Renhuizen. Mick, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well. Good afternoon, guys. You just named a bunch of temperatures that make it feel like we should be starting football season when we actually should have already been in it for a month. But that certainly is turning to the kind of fall weather that makes one miss football even more. And it's good that we'll hopefully see it come back in a month from now. So I know you're going to talk to Zach about that in an hour. I'll be listening intently to see what new news came out today, other than we don't know a schedule yet. And basketball has picked its date as well, November 25th, which tells me we will not be playing basketball in Maui because that would be the last day of the tournament on a normal year. And so that looks like that's going to shift to someplace on the mainland. And obviously I have interest in that for several reasons, as do all the Hoosier fans that made their trip plans to go to Maui. And that looks like now it's going to be somewhere in the States.
Yeah, and somewhere perhaps in this state, just right up the street, that's maybe Bankers Life Fieldhouse. We don't know. And that has been rumored.
And again, we don't even know if fans are going to be allowed at any of these things. We know football, that's a no-go, right? The Big Ten's going to play in front of empty stadiums.
Well, like I mentioned to Keith last hour, Mick, a month ago, the Big Ten said we're not playing football this year and we're not going back on that. We're not going to revisit that decision. So I don't know if saying never for anything is going to work out. So as of today, you're right. But a month from now, who knows? The Colts, they're going to get 2,500 in this week. And Jimmy Irsay's tweeting this afternoon, the Marion County Health Department is going to let them have 7,500 in week two or week three against the Jets. I'm not going to say never on this. We've seen some other places trying it out, and I know the Big Ten is probably watching it, and we know how much money through the turnstiles that could mean. But, yeah, there's a lot of definitely unanswered questions moving forward. And we hope the rates continue to fall. We hope the communal housing and everything else gets figured out where – we're not bringing it into the community. It seems like, Mick, super spreader events have really minimized what's been going on. Am I wrong there, or is that a good feeling?
No, that's a good segue. I know you're talking to Zach about all the sports stuff in an hour, so I'll just be quiet on that and wait to hear what he has to say.
We'll do U.S. Open, don't worry, before we get out of here. We'll get to that.
But, yes, I think it is encouraging to see that our infectious rate here has dropped after the first couple of weeks of students coming back before classes started. The extra effort that was made by the city, county health department, and the university to try to limit the super spreader events from happening. Mayor obviously made the private gathering number go from 50 to 15. That helped incrementally, but the efforts of all involved, including the students that are doing the right thing, they're not all doing the wrong thing, and our community members also responsible for doing the right thing. All those things have helped. So we just need to keep maintaining the things that have worked. Wear your mask, wash your hands, be physically distant. It's just that simple. We can all hope for a vaccine, but you know, as we think and talk about that coming in the future, whenever that is, everybody's not going to get it right away. We don't know how effective it's going to be. We don't know if it's going to take more than one dose. It's not the panacea, but what we're doing now is making a difference in containment. Let's just keep it up.
Mick, I'm kind of intrigued by what's going on and the masks and the crowds and everything. Something after the Big Ten announcement yesterday, I saw a lot of stuff all over social media of restaurants, bars, things like that, that normally would have a big crowd for a home football game here in Bloomington. But they also have a crowd of people that don't go to the game. Is the city looking ahead to what kinds of things may need to be done differently than you've done so far about people that'll want to go out to be someplace to watch the game?
Well, I think, Keith, as long as the county health department continues to keep the restrictions to the 50% in bars, or forgive me, I forgot now if we're at 75% in restaurants. But those numbers, if they don't substantially change, and I don't think they should, they're seemingly working, then that should take care of itself. You limit the capacity to those numbers, then you've kept the physical distance necessary. And you know, we really rely on. I think most establishment owners, restaurant and bar owners, are doing a pretty good job of keeping the patrons that come to their places safe by reminding them to wear their masks when they're not sitting at a table, keeping them at tables so they don't mingle and meander around. And those collisions, if you will, are the ones that are causing the spread. So we want to minimize that. So I think our bar and restaurant industry is doing a pretty good job, and I think we should just stay the course. 50% is 50%, whether it's 50% football fans or basketball fans or just people out. It doesn't matter what the reason is that they're going out, as long as they take those precautions while they're there.
We want to take a look at last night's city council meeting, because the mayor's local tax proposal was rejected 5-4. Let me ask you the question at the other end of all of this is, does that mean it's over, or can the mayor retool what he suggested and maybe come back with a slightly altered proposal? Is there anything that keeps that from coming back in a different identity?
No, any member of the tax council, that would be the county council, the city council, the Ellisville town council, I think Steinsville, well, doesn't have a vote, I think essentially could put a resolution forward to initiate some use of the margin of the extra space we still have in our local income tax threshold. So it could come back. Now, if you're asking if we're going to hurry up and bring it back, I don't think so. I think what we're going to do, which we said we were going to do all along, is we're going to go to the state, hopefully with our friends at the county, who also have expressed interest in finding a way to allow, in this case, the city, if it wants to enact a tax on city residents, to maybe do that. We got a couple of our staff members go up to meet with Representative Thompson, who has been authoring most of the local income tax legislation in recent years. And that meeting was good in that he listened and he wanted our thoughts, and he pledged that he would try to work with us. And he had authored some legislation that he was going to share with us, and we'll take a look at that and see if we can give him some feedback. We want to talk to the county and others. You know, it's going to take some time, and there's no guarantee. And I think that's the point the mayor was trying to make. For 15 years, we've tried to have this decoupled, and it's never effectively happened. So I don't know why we magically think it will this year. However, it doesn't mean we shouldn't try.
Well,
pass last night. Well, that's one path we could take.
Part of the question is, in listening to the comments that were made, yes, there were some that said this is not the right time for this because of the economy. But there were a lot of issues that seemed to be more like, we need to talk about this more. We needed to have a little more public input time and things like that.
More Zoom.
Yeah, something like that. So the basis would be, all right, if that's what it was, are we evenly divided? Don't do it at this time. Or are just, hey, with a little more time, maybe we could have talked about this?
I guess we'll never know the answer to that, Keith. But I think it's fair to say that, you know, those were criticisms of it, the speed of it, the number of times we've been able to talk about it. I will say the mayor brought it up in January. Yeah. There was a public meeting in March. COVID suspended the normal way we would have approached this. The deadline to pass the tax came quickly. Quickly after those things happened, COVID being the big interference of all this.
Yeah, COVID didn't change any of the deadlines on any of these things. No one said, okay, let's move these around. That doesn't work that way.
No, but remember, we have a city council that has to agree to put it on their agenda.
Right.
Mayor, just say, this is on your agenda, take it up now. And our city council, and I'm not blaming them at all for this, the president said, we're not going to do anything that's not an emergency through the early parts of COVID for March, April, May, until we almost got to the budget. There was limited items that the council would entertain. And so, you know, it's, again, not their fault. It just, all those things crescendoed into opposition that said, we haven't had enough time to think about this. However, the deadline to pass the tax from our perspective was looming, and there is a deadline. You have to do it by October 31st if you want it to go into effect next year by January 1st, and we did. We are trying to get more revenue to solve some of our community's challenges. We do see revenue will go down coming out of the pandemic. It's not hit us yet, but having experienced this in a recession in 2008, it's coming. It's pretty predictably coming. It may take a year or two before the city revenues go down, but they will. So again, we don't think the issue's dead. We do think that we listened to all the comments and the opposition and some supporters too, and all that will be something we process and talk about, and maybe this will give us more time to have those more thorough discussions that we heard some people say were their reasons for objecting.
Mick Redhuizen's the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. My listeners can hear us, Mick, when I turn my microphone on. It's weird how that works. as we move forward, that's an excellent timeline of how things can or can't happen. It's not just as easy as throwing it on there and let's figure out where it goes. So the next step in this, you talked about going to Indianapolis. Does anybody go to Indianapolis anymore? Do you pick up the Zoom and call up that way? Keith, where are they going to meet next year?
We did a story, Mick, about the fact that because of COVID, the House is going to be meeting in an adjacent building that has a lot more room. But if you're going to go to testify, you're going to do it in a different room on video. You're not even going to be in the room. And the Senate's going to meet, but they're taking away the gallery and putting Senate seats up in the gallery so that they're spread out more. So it's going to be different even up there. But there, a lot of what Mike is referring to is testimony and that kind of thing is going to be video.
Yeah, well, that's okay. I mean, we've had, I know the legislature's been out of session for most of COVID, but city council's met on Zoom and county council and commissioner meetings and all the other public realms in the area. The trustees, I believe the trustees of the university are meeting on Zoom. So we're all getting used to it, and the state will too. They'll figure it out. Looks like they already are. We did have an in-person meeting. I wasn't part of it, but we did send our representatives up to meet with Representative Thompson. It was in person, physically distanced with masks and appropriate hand washing and all those things, but it did happen physically. And we need to have more discussions with other community partners in this and talk about how this would be palatable to our community and something that we could get our state legislators behind if we want to make a change to what's existing. Now, remember, we are playing by the rules the state makes. So people can get mad about a lot of the stuff, but we have to play by the same rules. We can't make them up or change it unless we go forward to the legislature and ask them to do so. And that's what we have been doing for 15 years. And that's what we'll, I guess, apparently have to do again and see if we can make this the year that we can get something changed that will allow cities to replace lost revenue. Remember, we have property tax caps that we didn't have 15 years, 10 years ago, 5 years ago. We do now. Those are real and they're affecting us and they're limiting our ability to take community issues and address them with the resources it takes to address them. So I will always respect that people will go, well, surely there's some waste you can cut. Fair enough. And we will continue to look at that. And I'm sure there are some things, but you can't cut your way out of everything. You're going to have to find new revenue streams. And that's what we were attempting to do. And we'll try to make a better case moving forward if we take this up again.
The deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington is Mick Redhuizen. He checks in with us every Thursday afternoon, just after 4:05. And Keith, you had a story this week. Bloomington Transit is going to keep their fares.
Yes. Fare free.
Free of fare.
Yeah.
Well, there's an excellent example. So how long can transit do that without another revenue stream? So that's about $600,000 a year they would generate in fares. They're waiving that for a good reason. You can't do that forever. You have to replace it with something. So that's just another good example of if you take away from one spot, how do you make up for it?
Let me take you back on the Bloomington Transit thing, because before all of this got really convoluted, Bloomington Transit had planned some new routes. They were even talking about maybe even extending out near Ivy Tech and different places and all that. And then part of the story about the free fare was you guys took a hit when the IU students came back. And the story is because of all the online classes, the students aren't getting on a bus to go to school. And so I think the numbers were like 199,000 rides down to maybe 60,000 fewer rides, primarily IU students not riding the buses. With all of the financial things, where is this all going to wash out at the end?
That's a great question, and I wish you'd get your magic eight ball or something else out and tell us, because that's exactly what Lou May, our transit director, is trying to figure out with his board. All the plans prior to COVID looked like a very robust transit system that needed to expand more routes, more frequency, possibly going out to the county. That would have required city council action to do, but that was something all being discussed. And then now we have 22% passengers that we had before COVID. And that's higher than it was because the students have come back. Yes. Revenue comes from the university because we jointly operate and maintain the buses together. And so that revenue is in question too. We really don't know if the university is going to cut funding to transit. So that's another wild card still in play, and it's still an unknown. They've been very good partners, and we suspect they will continue to be with the transit system, but they too are feeling financial pressure, the university, and while everybody is, right? You are at home, many people are at home, and certainly institutions are as well. So those unknowns are simply something we're going to have to wait on until we can decide how this levels off and then discuss again, bring back the discussions about what should transit look like moving forward.
And the other part of this is similar but different, just talking about transit and looking out the window. You see parklets in multiple places around the square, the parking revenue coming in. I know you don't want to make money off that. You'd hope it would be revenue neutral, but it's not pointing in that direction either.
No, that's another lost revenue stream. And, you know, we don't know when that's going to come back. We have our two parking structures coming out of the ground, and they'll be ready in March and August, respectively, in 2021. Let's hope by that time, the sense of economic activity downtown is what it used to be. Then those garages will fill, and those parklets may or may not stay. They're quite popular. They may very well be necessary. Hopefully, the ability to absorb the lost spaces that those create on surface parking will be absorbed in the garages. But, you know, without people going downtown, there's no revenue to offset those expenses to build the garages, for example.
They appear to be popular because as I drive downtown from time to time, I see added places where they've popped up.
Yeah, they are. And actually, we've run out of barricades to create any new ones. So we just recently decided that we found a company we could rent from. And so there's still in a process for restaurants that want to do that in front of their establishments. And now we're eliminating a barrier of we've run out of barricades, so we couldn't create any more. Now we think we can accommodate a few more. They're popular. It's great. This is, I think, a good example of businesses working with the city government being flexible and adaptable, city council taking quick action to approve some things. They're going to extend this program, by the way, through the end of the year. It's supposed to expire at the end of September. At their September 23rd meeting, I think they're going to extend it through December. Now, whether or not the parklets will still be active in December will largely depend on weather, but at least the program can continue as long as the weather's nice.
We'll have to have the city council lift the bonfire ordinance in the city limits.
We're speaking with Mick Raneisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. And Mick, last night again at the city council meeting, was there any tightening, any polishing up of the city budget in any way?
Not at last night's discussion. I mean, we certainly now have to consider if there'll be any changes made to our budget proposal. The next time we'll go to the council to review the budget is September 30th. Remember, the August hearings, 17th through the 21st, are presentations. There was a straw vote taken for each budget, but it really doesn't mean anything from a legal standpoint. It's just a way to get some sense of what councilors approve of or would like to see us change. We're in that period where we're talking to them and trying to figure out if there's anything to change. Without the replacement revenue from LIT, we seriously have to think about how much we want to dip into reserves next year. So that's a new item that we'll have to talk about in the coming weeks.
Well, we'll write that down, Keith.
Yes.
Get your crayon out and make sure that's happening. Mick, it's Wing Foot. It's the 120th edition of the United States Golf Open. It should have been played over Father's Day weekend back in June, but here we are in September. So we've got a little NFL, NBA playoffs, major championship golf. We got it all going on. We know that the Big Ten hopefully is coming back in the right direction. Wingfoot's impossible. It has been quiet today. There's a couple reasons why. First, let's get to your tournament selection. Who is going to win the 120th edition of the United States Open?
Boy, I've gone back and forth on this one. The rough is thick. It's fall, not summer. The course is challenging enough. The greens, they say, are as difficult as Pine Valley and Augusta. With the rough, I feel like it's going to take somebody who can keep the ball in the fairway and can gouge it out of the rough and then putt really well. So how many people can do that and do it 4 days in a row,
yeah,
right?
Good point.
So, Dustin Johnson's been doing so well in all these tournaments. I went against him, and you told me, why did I do that the last time? And I feel like John Rahm's right there too, and I know those are the number one and two players in the world. And as I think about other people who could win, Brooks Koepka's injured; he's not playing in it, but he's always a dominant player that just isn't available because of an injury to play in the event. And I just think it's going to be chalk. I just think it's DJ's had a great year. It's not a new year, although they're calling it a new year with the way that.
Yeah, there wasn't much of a break, was there?
But I just think he's played too well, and all the things that it takes to win on a course like that, I think he's got. So I'm gonna go with the number one player in the world.
Dustin Johnson has been struggling with his putter today, but that doesn't mean his tournament is over by any way, shape, or form. As I'm scrolling the leaderboard trying to find him, I saw him at 2 over, I thought, last time. DJ, 2 over through 11, and that's going to be fine. It's T63 right now, but the afternoon wave hasn't even got halfway through the course yet, so let's not worry about all of that. Justin Thomas this morning went out and shot 65, the first player ever at Wingfoot to shoot 65. He did so, Mick, with 6 birdies and only 1 bogey, no others on the card. He is the leader in the clubhouse. He is the leader, period, as we roll on through the afternoon. Patrick Reed, Captain America, who has won at Augusta, who has won at another Tillinghast course, Bethpage Black. He won a playoff event there, and another Tillinghast course. I believe he won at Ridgewood as well. I'll have to look that one up. I don't think that's right, though. Patrick Reed, 66 with an ace. He is -4, 1 shot behind. Rory McIlroy also played this morning. 67 from Rory, -3, tied for third. On the course right now, some familiar names. Bryson DeChambeau is 3 under through 11. Rory Sabatini, Thomas Peters, and Sean Norris join him on 3 under par. John Rahm, Lee Westwood, Joaquin Niemann, Rafael Cabrera-Bello, and Ricky Fowler all -2 on the course. Jason Kokrak, Brendan Todd, and Harris English -2 in the clubhouse. And I believe my two favorite quotes this week about Wingfoot. Number one, Sandy Tatum, who set it up for the massacre in 1974, said, "We're not trying to embarrass the world's best players. We're trying to identify them." I absolutely love that quote. And I think, I'm not sure if this was Lee Trevino, "The safest place in Wingfoot is in the clubhouse." Because you can't make any bogeys in the clubhouse.
Yeah, those are serious scores. And what do we know about the U.S. Open? It's hard to break par. How many tournament winners have broken par?
At the U.S. Open? At Wingfoot? Yeah. Zero. So that's not true. Fuzzy Zeller broke par here. Him and Norman were tied, and then Norman shot a million in the playoffs. So Fuzzy technically shot par. Here's the problem why the scores are low today. Couple reasons why. The sun is not out, so nothing is drying out. The other reason is with 2 hours less of daylight here in September, Mick, a field of 144, you can't have 6.5 hour rounds and get everybody done in 36 holes, where Saturday's round you're going to have to cut pins in the middle of the day and do all those things. You can't do it. So as this moves on, that is the general consensus. It will get harder. Mother Nature did not help today, and they can't have rounds where they can't strand people at dark. So the teeth will show on the weekend. When the cut is made. And tomorrow it's supposed to be sunny and breezy, so maybe we'll see the teeth of Wingfoot. We will. It's just a question of when we will see them. And now?
Right. Well, we'll see. I'll look forward to watching it this weekend for sure.
And now it is time for trivia.
Doo-doo-doom.
That's right. We need that one of those. We need some creepy Halloween, Dennis James music for trivia.
Da-da-dum.
We're ready to fire.
Here is your trivia theme this week.
Theme's good. It's not a category.
The theme never has anything to do with the question.
It's not a category. That's a proper way of putting it. That's Celeste is smart.
On this day in 1975, the Rhodes Scholarship became available to female recipients for the first time. To celebrate this week's trivia, we'll all be about famous people who have been awarded the prestigious award. All right, ready for question number one?
Yes,
Rhodes Scholarship,
female. Not just female, but this is the anniversary of the first time female recipients were able to be eligible for the award.
So we've already learned something.
Yes, you did.
That's the good news.
Always Celeste gives you something that you can walk away with and say, "I did not know that."
That's true, every week.
All right, first question. Which MSNBC anchor was awarded the scholarship in 1995? choosing to progress their studies from Stanford to Lincoln College, Oxford? Was it Brian Williams, Rachel Maddow, Nicole Wallace, or Richard Louie?
1995, went from Stanford to Oxford. Well, that can't be Brian Williams. He's way too old for that.
And I something says pick Rachel Maddow.
All right, I'm going with Keith Engel. Pick Rachel Maddow. She's probably the most popular person on MSNBC, yes? I don't know. I don't watch that. We're going with Maddow.
It is Rachel Maddow.
Keith, attaboy. Look at that feeling, Keith. One for one.
Yeah.
Go with the gut, and you talked in your partner, so you're both 1-0.
We got plenty of gut here in the studio,
Mick. That's right. No knowledge, just gut.
Plenty of gut going on here.
That's why we're on radio.
That's right. It.
Uh-huh. All right, question two. Which former presidential candidate was awarded the scholarship in 2005, the year after he graduated from Harvard? Was it Al Gore, Barry Goldwater, Chris Christie, or Pete Buttigieg?
It can't be after he graduated, and it was a candidate, I'm going to say Buttigieg.
I think it has to be because Al Gore's way too old in 2005.
Yeah.
Who are my other choices?
Barry Goldwater, Christie, or Pete Buttigieg.
It's Buttigieg, yes.
It is Buttigieg. Graduated from Harvard.
Two for two.
Won the Rhodes Scholarship in 2005.
The next answer's got to be Bill Clinton, then. Because Bill Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar, wasn't he?
Not one of the options.
Well,
as it turns there. Out.
I thought he was. I'm going to check that out.
All right, you're 2-0. Third question. Which Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist was awarded the scholarship in 2000 after graduating from Yale? Was it Ronan Farrow, Esther Hudson, Molly O'Toole, or Mary Lou Forbes?
Oh, geez.
I have absolutely no idea, and I'm going to admit that.
Give me the names again.
Ronan
Farrow, Esther Hudson, Molly O'Toole, or Mary Lou Forbes?
I'm going to go with Ronan.
He's the one that stirred the pot. So hey, you were right on the first one. You got the gut rolling over there.
My
I'm going to go. Let's go
right.
Gut.
Yeah.
It is Ronan Farrow.
Look at that.
Oh, jeez.
Look at that.
Farrow also served as a special advisor in the State Department during the Obama administration. I did not know that. Thank you, Celeste. And Ronan Farrow is a spitting image of you-know-who. And I mean, not his mom, but his...
No, Woody Allen.
Father.
Yeah. Yeah. The Bill Clinton was a Rhodes Scholar, believe it or not.
Yeah.
Georgetown University. We have dominated Celeste 2 weeks in a row. I'm not sure that we need to put that out over the air.
Don't
that
say
done
that out loud.
Oh, well, that was a mistake.
You know what? That's fine. It's like it's just like winged foot, Mick. When you play it well, you might as well enjoy it because you're not going to do it very often.
Not going to happen again.
Not going to happen very often. So we should bang on our chest a little bit for all that. Hey, have a great weekend. We appreciate your insight and expertise. And maybe, just maybe, next week. Yeah, every week we have something different. On whether it's COVID stuff or sports or something goofy, we always have something to get interested about. So great job as always, my friend. Have a great weekend. Enjoy this weather, and we'll see you next Thursday.
Thanks, Mick.
Thank you.